B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
Most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help you rate it.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hour number three of Agenda Free Friday. Mike is off today. Jim Murray alongside Matt McCarthy in studio to give us headlines. And as is the case every Friday, Chris Gasper, now of Channel 5 WCBB-TV Boston, joins us in studio. Chris is powered by the commuter rail. So remember, if you're an essential worker, maybe a medical professional or first responder, the MBTA is running additional commuter rail trains into Boston to help you arrive for your early morning shift and social distance while on board. Visit MBTA.com/coronavirus for schedules and more information. So, Chris, we have a lot of ground to cover this week, pal.
Yeah, that's for sure, huh, Maz?
We do. A lot of ground to cover this week. So, but we're going to start in a little bit unusual. It's not the most newsworthy story of the week. But we're going to start with Jared Stidham in the report that he is overseeing a group of, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 New England Patriots players who are conducting workouts here during the offseason. Mike Reese reported this morning on ESPN, and you had what I thought was a rather interesting response, Gasper.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting that it's all the credit here is going to Jared Stidham, second-year quarterback, for organizing this when Brian Hoyer's involved. And Brian Hoyer's been the guy who's been running OTAs when Tom Brady has been skipping them the last couple of years. Brian Hoyer's been the ringleader. He's a veteran guy. He's been a starter. He's organized these things before. So I feel like it's probably both quarterbacks organizing this, but it's somehow being presented as it's Stidham's show. And I, you know, look, I far be it for me to ever question Mike Reese's reporting, and I speak firsthand because I work with him. So I'm not questioning that. I'm sure, you know, that Stidham's heavily involved. I'm sure that's what he was told. But I also feel like it would behoove the organization to create the perception that it's just Stidham and it's Stidham's show. I have a hard time believing that given Brian Hoyer's experience here in New England and his experience as an NFL quarterback and the fact that he's been a starter before and organized these types of things before.
And proof to what Chris is saying, and that it might be a bit of propaganda. So, like, I just knew the headline, and I knew we were going to discuss it, but I didn't read the story. You know, it being a Friday, I figured I was like, I'll lick the stamp and mail it in. But I thought it was just about Stidham. I didn't know that Hoyer was actually there. So if you just go by the headline, it's like Stidham's organizing this. Stidham's the guy. Stidham. But you do read this, and you find out, oh, Hoyer is there. So what is this, really?
It's the quarterbacks organizing, which is great. Like, that's not to take away from Stidham, but I think, again, it definitely behooves the Patriots to create the perception that this is Stidham taking charge and this is Stidham taking the reins. And look at the respect all the teammates have for Stidham, like these other starting quarterbacks. He says, hey, let's go throw somewhere, and everybody shows up. And I'm sure there's an element of that, but it's more like, okay, here are the quarterbacks who could potentially start for the Patriots, Stidham and Hoyer. They want to throw to their receivers. The receivers say, okay, we're going to show up. They're not showing up just for Stidham. I find that hard to believe.
So propaganda is the right word, right? It's propaganda. Yeah. This is what, Murray, obviously, I give you credit for using it first. But the team wants it out there because they want to make it clear that they believe Jared Stidham is a leader and that there is. So I guess what I'm getting at, Chris, in some level, because to me, Chris, this is one of those stories that's more newsworthy if he didn't show up. Or if this weren't going on. So the fact that it's happening, great. That's good. We're all happy to see it. It would be far more revealing to me if he weren't out there working with people and getting ready for the season, because now he has a great deal at stake. And we all expect him to be trying to do the necessary things to win the job. So I sort of feel like, I'm not saying it's not news, but it would be much bigger news, I think, if there were reason to doubt his willingness to invest and his willingness to work and his willingness to get people to line up behind him or whatever, whether it's with Hoyer or without. So I just don't know if it's that big a deal that this is going on. That's all. But you tell me, maybe I'm full of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big deal because it's being represented as, hey, Tom Brady's not the only one organizing players. Jared Stidham's doing it too. And I think, again, that's another reason that it benefits the Patriots to get this out there, because obviously Brady made big time headlines when he took some of his receivers to the park in Tampa, and everybody was like, oh, look at Tom Brady. This is what he does. He's the Pied Piper. Tom Brady's a leader. And it's like, okay, well, Tom Brady's not the only one doing this. Oh, look, our guy, Jared Stidham, our guy's doing this too. Oh, Edelman's showing up. And again, I'm sure Stidham had a part in it, but I tend to believe it would be more of a veteran guy like Hoyer getting together with Stidham and saying, hey, we should do this. I feel like, you know, it's sort of like a party with two hosts, not one. And it's being represented like Stidham. Does anybody really think Stidham called up Hoyer and said, hey, you know, I think we should throw to these guys?
And no shot.
And Hoyer was like, oh, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that. NFL veteran that I am, and guy who's been first string and running OTAs the last 2 years.
So, Chris, is this part of the reason the Patriots wanted Hoyer here over a guy like Dalton? And I'm not saying Dalton wouldn't do this, but Hoyer knows the Patriots operation. He certainly knows what's important to Bill Belichick. They have a certain way of doing things. And that Hoyer's makeup, and I think people have always regarded as being good. It's not a question of makeup with Hoyer, you know, from that standpoint, good teammate, good employee, all of those things. And maybe maybe he was brought back to hold Stidham's hand and say, this is what you have to do. This is the type of stuff that will go a long way towards winning your credibility with teammates and to making you a better football player. So let me help you along. But in other words, was Hoyer the one who said to Stidham, hey, call these guys and start a range of workouts. I'll help you out, but you need to do it.
Yeah, I could totally foresee a situation like that. And I think one of the reasons Hoyer was brought back is because he's an egoless guy and he's not going to, you know, go out there and stand up and say, hey, I had a part in this. He's happy, I think, to be in the background. And he's a guy who's been a starter, but also has been a backup. You bring in a Dalton or a Cam Newton, those are guys who are used to being the alpha, used to being the guy. And they would push Stidham a little bit for that role. They would push Stidham a little bit for being the guy out front. Whereas Hoyer's not going to do that. I think he's okay and he's fine with Stidham being the guy who's out front, so to speak. Look, there'll be a competition, and Brian wants to win that competition, no question about it. But he's fine with Stidham being sort of out front as the QB. Some of these other guys, I think, would come in and, frankly, overshadow Stidham.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the goal was to have someone there who can nurture Stidham, for lack of a better word. Maybe Hoyer is the right choice. And again, I don't think the guy can play. But if Stidham's out of the gate, Stidham is playing, and we see his development, and Hoyer can have a hand in that, then to me, that's certainly reason to have Hoyer here over someone like Dalton. I think Dalton should be here because I don't know that Stidham is ready. But once he gets on the field, we'll have a much better look at that. Anything else that caught your attention specifically from the week, Chris? I'd love to get your assessment sort of the standing of MLB at the moment as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the MLB situation, for me, I just feel like what's happening is both of these sides are so myopic and so focused on the short-term losses and trying to mitigate those and, you know, which side has the inalienable right to make their losses lessened versus sort of saying, you know what, look, financially this year is going to be a big hit for the entire industry, but if we can put our sport out there, if we can get people engaged at a time when there's a real hunger, a real thirst for sports, in the long term, that will benefit us. In the short term, yes, we're going to lose money. It's going to cost us to stage these games without fans. But in the long term, this is an investment in the growth of the game. And I think what you're seeing here is that Major League Baseball, whether it's from the MLBPA or it's Rob Manfred and the owners, is a sport completely lacking in vision.
Oh, Chris, it's been that way forever. God, please. Like, we'll get to more of that later. But the idea that MLB can think outside the box and be creative and really assess its problems on a much bigger level. The game's been inept for that for a long, long time. Is it Eliza in Wakefield on Stidham? Go ahead, Eliza.
Hi. I was calling in to say I feel like a big reason Belichick's probably sticking with Hoyer and Stidham over bringing someone new in is because with COVID, this is probably the worst season ever for a new quarterback to join a team and learn the playbook and start working with other players.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I've heard that one before, but here's the thing. So Stidham has 1 year in the system. Why do we all assume that Stidham has the system down? And Belichick has often said in the past that the most growth for a guy comes between year one and year two. So isn't his growth being hampered? Like, I'd rather see an established NFL quarterback who's played in the league and knows what it's like to pull the trigger in games as a starter, have that guy learn the system. Like, he's only a year behind Stidham, who has thrown four passes in his career. I think that one's overplayed, like, from the Stidham standpoint. From the Hoyer standpoint, I get it. But this idea that, oh, in this COVID offseason, no starting quarterback could possibly come in and learn the system or catch up to Stidham. Well, how do we know what level Stidham's at in the offense?
A more plausible COVID-related thing that why these two guys are the quarterbacks is that they can't really get great medicals on someone like Cam Newton, right? Like, he's had all those issues with his ankle, his foot, the shoulder. So, I don't know. You haven't been able to get these guys checked out the way that you want, right? So,
yeah, and let me put it this way. If Aaron Rodgers suddenly became available, do you think Bill Belichick would say, geez, COVID offseason.
Oh, no, that's true.
Can't really teach him our system. You know what? We're good. We have Stidham. He has a year in the system. No.
Yeah, I think the whole system thing is complete garbage. Really, you know, because again, my personal belief is it's going to take a little while for Stidham to get up to speed, Chris. And not to use my favorite player, Murray, I'm sorry, not to use Garoppolo as any sort of barometer, but he didn't really play till year three. So I just think that it's reasonable to then assume that, okay, it takes a little while to get up to speed. Like, I don't think that that is wrong. And the model that Green Bay used with Aaron Rodgers, or the model that was used in San Francisco by default, or however it resulted, Young sat there for a while and absorbed it all before he actually became the guy. My one concern from the beginning was whether or not Stidham was ready to start playing every day, every week. Okay, that's one thing I was really concerned about. And based on what Greg Bedard had been telling us early in the offseason, to me, the Patriots weren't convinced that Stidham was going to be ready. So that's why I wanted a veteran guy in there with some credentials. But if they're going to go with Stidham either way and they're looking to nurture him, well, then maybe Hoyer's the right guy. Maybe it's that simple. And you don't want a real threat there. And I think you've made this point in the past. The job is already Stidham's. They're just trying to make it look like he has to win the job.
Yeah, and I think even if Hoyer starts, as Rob Ninkovich has said, Hoyer's the starter at the beginning of the season for 2, 3, 4 games, ultimately we know where they want to go, and that's Stidham. And I think they'll sort of want to make him feel like he had to earn the job, but ultimately that's the guy I think they're going to go with. And I think everybody knows that. And that's one reason that Hoyer's here, because he's not a real long-term threat. And he is a again, as I said, he's an egoless guy. So if he's the starter and suddenly he has to be the backup, then he will be a great backup. He's sort of like a quarterback Sherpa for Stidham to guide him through all this stuff. And he's not going to be the type of guy that's going to bail on the team and go pout if he's not the starter. That's not the way he is.
Okay, so we got a lot of ground to cover with Casper. Certainly, NBA playoff structure, the NHL now, much clearer picture. Drew Brees' comments, which we'll get to. MLB, Jared Stidham, all the above. Chris will be here for the balance of the hour. 617-779-0985 on Agenda Free Friday.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo!
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
What is your responsibility as a leader in times like this for the rest of your teammates and players in the league?
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country.
Our communities are under siege, and we need help. And what you're telling us is, don't ask for help that way. Ask for a different way. I can't listen to it when you ask that way. We're done asking, Drew. And people who share your sentiments, who express those, and push them throughout the world, the airwaves, are the problem. And it's unfortunate because I considered you a friend. I looked up to you. You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for. But sometimes you should shut the f*** up.
So there you have it. What was, in all likelihood, the most talked about sports story in America. This week, comments made by Drew Brees. The other voice you heard there was Malcolm Jenkins, now the New Orleans Saints, formerly of the Philadelphia Eagles, in response to comments Brees made earlier in the week. Brees obviously has since apologized, taken a great deal of criticism. So, Chris, let me ask you, your very first reaction when you heard what Drew Brees said?
I would say frustration. Frustration that Drew Brees is still misrepresenting and misunderstanding Kaepernick's protest. And that,
how about missing the point, Chris?
Yeah, he is, and he is missing the point. And I think a lot of people do that. He is making the cardinal mistake that I think a lot of people have made, which is they fall into the trap of condemning the manner of the protest instead of condemning the injustices and the inequality that precipitated the protest in the first place. And there was a way for him to say what he wanted to say without sort of saying disrespecting the flag. And I understand where he's coming from, but I thought he was particularly illogical and ill-informed when he started talking about his grandfather serving in the military, because some of the greatest disrespect of veterans would be the 1 million African-American veterans who fought in World War II and came back to segregation and discrimination and Jim Crow laws and not being able to participate in the GI Bill and not being able to buy a house in Levittown like the other veterans. That, to me, is disrespect of the military and disrespect of the veterans. And that's sort of part of what Kaepernick and others are talking about. Like, why is that disrespect okay? And I thought it was sort of tone deaf for him to have this sort of one view of who the veteran, like all the veterans were just white, Drew. That's, they all looked like your grandfather. And I know that's not what he meant, but that's 100% the way it came off. And for him to talk, to be talking about the military and the veterans and not to either, to either not know or not mention that part of the story that I just mentioned, for me, was particularly frustrating, and I think really ill-advised and ill-informed on his part. And I think it's really frustrating for a lot of us that Drew Brees would make comments like that and sort of denigrate the manner of the protest and completely overlook why the protest is actually necessary. And that's why I think people like Malcolm Jenkins got so frustrated. And I'm glad that Drew Brees course-corrected. But, you know, and there are things about history I don't know, too. We can all learn. But I would just say he needs to go into this, you know, with an open mind, I think with an open heart and with open ears to learn things that maybe he didn't know. Like, I don't know how many people know, you know, Jackie Robinson served in the military before he broke the color barrier and was subjected to a racially motivated court-martial attempt while he was in the military, while he was stationed at Fort Hood in Texas for refusing to go to the back of the bus. And, you know, Jackie Robinson is obviously a great American hero. And, you know, people will point to Jackie Robinson as this beacon of how we can all pull together. If you've ever read Jackie Robinson's autobiography, Jackie Robinson himself said in the autobiography, "I cannot stand and sing the anthem. I cannot salute the flag. I know that I'm a black man in a white world in 1972, in 1947, at my birth in 1919. That's Jackie Robinson saying that. So these issues aren't new. And it's not new for athletes to feel this way. And I think people need to sort of be informed and educated on that element of this.
Yeah, Brees was a tone-deaf hammerhead for what he said, especially given, you know, the circumstances. What do you think it's going to do to the team? Some guys seemingly have, like Michael Thomas, have, since Brees has apologized, have accepted it. I don't know about others and other guys in the league. What do you think it does to that team?
You know, look, I hate to be sort of cynical about it, but the interesting thing about sports and the thing I love about sports is it brings together people from all different walks of life and backgrounds for a common goal, and that goal is winning. And I've said this before, and I don't say it lightly in these circumstances as we deal with really serious, really grave social issues, but I do think to a degree winning is the ultimate deodorant. And if the team starts well and they're winning, I think guys will be more forgiving of Drew Brees. And the other thing I would say during this, and this is an important point too, you know, I think let's not go too far here and start vilifying people who are potential allies. Drew Brees made a mistake. Drew Brees misspoke. But Drew Brees is not a racist. Drew Brees is not an evil human being by any means. I think he's someone who ultimately wants to be an ally in this fight. And I think he should be allowed to be an ally. So don't completely demonize him. And I hope that his teammates would not do that. You know, again, he made a mistake. He misspoke. He took the protest, I think, out of context. And I understand the frustration of that. But this should not condemn Drew Brees for eternity.
Oh, that's rational and common sense. I'd like to hear more of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's... And I think a lot of those guys, whether it's Malcolm Jenkins, you saw the tweets from Michael Thomas, they're gonna welcome him back into to the movement and back into the discussion. Because ultimately, look, if somebody says one wrong thing and we just write them off and don't allow them to participate in the discussion, like, these are really hard discussions to have. And we're asking people to be open and honest about difficult things, and people are going to misspeak. So you can't just write them off at that point. Drew Brees apologized. He course corrected. Hopefully people will move on. And when he speaks about this in the future, he's certainly entitled to his opinion. But I hope that he won't portray it or project it as blatant disrespect for the flag.
So, Chris, I'll tell you, you use the word disappointing. I find it infuriating. Because to me, it's exactly... you know, what the point was in the first place, that you can't just brush it off as some other, you know, it was changing the subject. Like, to me, it's the classic changing the subject. There's a protest being drawn to an issue, which we all know is very real, very real. And then at the same time, you have a guy saying, well, yeah, but what about the flag? No. We're not going to talk about the flag. This is not the flag. This is not about the flag. So let's change the subject so that we don't have to deal with the real issue. I personally expected more from Brees. I expected more from him. Brees is one of the real senatorial characters in the NFL. Right there with Brady, as a senior quarterback who's been around a long time, it is supposed to stand for everything that is right in the NFL. He's supposed to stand for that. So I forgive him. I mean, it was a mistake. And if you listen to the whole thing that he said, he did express concern for the way African Americans are treated by white American police officers and all of this stuff. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He did say it. But to make it about the anthem was wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
it was wrong.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's frustrating for a lot of us that people will use sort of patriotism or the flag as this, like, shroud to cover up systemic racism and prejudice. It's like, well, no, you can't do this because this, you know, and it's like, well, hold on a second. Like, you know, you're using that to deflect and protect a system that's in place that doesn't work for everybody. And so that's sort of part of the frustration with Drew Brees. But again, you know, like I said, I don't want to condemn everybody who misspeaks, because ultimately I think we all benefit if it's more inclusive conversation. And I'll also say Drew Brees is an NFL. He's won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. You see, like, on his uniform, he has that little emblem on there that looks like the trophy. He's done a lot of great things in New Orleans. He's done a lot of great things for charity. But I think this is a subject that, like a lot of us, you know, he and like a lot of people, he needs greater education on. I'm sure he thought, you know, he was as educated as he needed to be, but he's not, because he doesn't fully understand, and he'll never sort of fully understand what the black experience is like. And so, you know, for him, something that is disrespect for the flag is, you know, for those of us on the other side of it, really a peaceful protest and a cry for help.
Can I tell you what? I'm reluctant to do this, but Dave is in Chelmsford on the Brees comments. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, being a veteran, and every, you know, every veteran has fought for the rights to everyone to protest the way they feel to do so. And just because Drew Brees believes that in the flag and the anthem in that way doesn't mean that someone else's feelings or their choice of protest infringes upon their belief that they have to curtail to that thing. Drew Brees never said he did not believe that there's an issue. He does. He just said, this is something that I cherish, and I won't let something infringe upon that. That doesn't make him a racist. That doesn't make him wrong. It's just that's just how he believes, and there's a lot of other people believe that as well. That's why it was so controversial.
But he framed it as disrespect, you know, as opposed to a protest and expressing, you know, a First Amendment right to try and make sure that the country lives up to all the ideals for all U.S. citizens that flag is supposed to represent. And I think that was the problem. When he said disrespect the flag, He didn't say, like, you know, hey, for, this isn't the manner. You know, I appreciate what they're doing. Personally, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, but I understand. He said, I'm never going to be in favor of somebody disrespecting the flag.
Yeah, it was just bad timing. There was an air of defiance to it. Like, there was a way, even if he feels that strong about the way that he feels, is just like, hey, it's not like you just said. Like, hey, it's not for me. I wouldn't do that. But, hey, I respect the right to kneel during the anthem.
And I think the frustrating...
He changed the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He changed the issue.
I think
that, which to me is what one of the big problems has been, is that people don't want to acknowledge the reality of the issue. This is the problem, is he changed it. Even the caller doesn't get it. He changed the issue. Stop changing the issue.
I think what's frustrating is too about it is, look, I understand why someone might feel that it's disrespecting the flag. But ultimately, as a citizen, like, what's more important to you? Somebody disrespecting the flag or blatant disrespect and potential loss of life of your fellow citizens? Like, what means more to you? Disrespect to the flag or disrespect from a human rights? Because it's not civil rights. We're talking about human rights from a human rights standpoint. And that's kind of frustrating for some of us, too. It's like, okay, well, you care so much about the flag, and that's great. You know, I'm a proud American. I'm proud to be an American. I have two grandfathers who fought in World War II. I have an uncle. I have uncles who fought in Vietnam. I'm proud of their service. I'm proud to be an American. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, what do you care more about? Because it seems like you care more about the symbols and the symbolism than you do the actual people. And that's where it gets frustrating.
I mean, I personally expected more from Drew Brees. That's all. I expected more from him. And again, he reversed course or corrected course, as you put it, Chris. And I think that's a nice way to say it. And I think that he just he was misguided. And he, as many people are doing, many white people in particular, he made it about him. He made it about him. And it's not about him. And so, again, with all due respect to Drew Brees, there are lots of people out there who have family members that served. And so, and it wasn't about disrespecting service people or disrespecting the flag. It was never about that in the beginning. Don't make it about that. And that's where the selfishness comes in. In any case, Matt McCarthy's got your headlines. We'll continue with Gasper for the next half hour. He's not going anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Belger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
Why is baseball's return to play so much more complicated than that of the NBA or the NHL?
Jay, because at the time when they're trying to come up with an agreement, the working relationship between the players and the owners is at its worst in about a quarter of a century. In the 2016 collective bargaining talks, the owners won a lot of financial ground, and the free agency that followed was not as lucrative as the players wanted. So the amount of distrust, the amount of suspicion in these negotiations is extremely high, and both sides actually have their factions. We saw Max Scherzer the other day tweet out about how, from his perspective, the players really are done negotiating when it comes to salary rollbacks. Other players feel like that there should be some effort to get to the middle ground. And on the owner's side, there are some owners who'd be willing to shut down the sport right now for this year so they can mitigate financial losses.
So this is one I love, too. And I meant to bring this up earlier in the week, and I'll say this quickly because I want Chris Gasper's answer to a specific question. But that is the idea that players got porked, for lack of a better word, on the last CBA. The last time they negotiated, the owners and the owners kicked their asses. So now the players have a bad deal, and now they're mad at the owners for it. Shouldn't they be mad at Tony Clark? Because that's the guy that negotiated the deal for him or oversees the Players Association. Like, if Tony Clark's the problem, get rid of Tony Clark. Like, that's the whole point of a negotiation. I'm not saying the owners should go in looking to exploit the players, so I get it, believe me. But if the nitwit you have as your union chief screwed up the deal, well, then go to him. That would be, to me, that would be step number one. In any case, Gasper is here, as he is every Friday. And so I'll ask you, Chris, just quickly, do you think they're going to play? Do you think that ultimately they'll get this figured out? Or do you think the season is dead? Because there's a lot of pessimism out there in the last couple of days, Chris.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Maz. It really is. I think ultimately cooler heads will prevail and they'll play, because I think what you just talked about, the owners have so thoroughly dominated the players at the bargaining table. And I think that's one of the reasons they're trying to do this now. And I look at it and I feel like, again, it's really sort of, it's greedy. And I think it's also a bad play by the owners. Like, let me put it to you like this. You're right. They've dominated Tony Clark. They've kicked his butt at the negotiating table. So they feel like they can do it routinely. But everybody knows in any sort of negotiation, there's give and take. And sometimes the other side needs a win. Tony Clark's in a position where he needs a win. He needs a win to keep his job. And long term, if you're negotiating this next CBA after the 2021 season, your MLB, don't you want to be staring across the table at Tony Clark instead of some union firebrand? So again, I think this is sort of short-sighted. Like, they're going to lose money. Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, just sort of, and I read Passan's piece, just mitigating these losses to the degree that they're trying to do it, I just don't think is worth, A, the long-term health of the game, and B, potentially having Tony Clark removed when you can take him to the cleaners again in 2021. It just seems like a really stupid, short-sighted strategy, rather, by the owners. I just don't get it. Just to me, seems like it is just the height of overconfidence to believe that you just have this divine right to clean their clock every time you negotiate. Sometimes you have to give a little to get a lot. And I think if they give a little here, they can get a lot if Tony Clark's still at the negotiating table in 2021.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to defend the owner's side of it, Chris, because, again, we all understand how the thing works. And I really do. I wonder whether owners want to kill the season. I started wondering that over a week ago because of the way they were approaching this thing, and maybe they just feel they're better off not playing. I do. I wonder that. Let's take a couple of calls here. Kelly's in Manged. Kelly.
Yeah, hi. Who am I speaking with?
Kelly, it's Tony Maz. You're on with Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, and Matt McCarthy as well.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Maz. The only thing that I had to say was that I believe in the freedom of speech, and I also believe in the freedom of protest. And what they have done is perfectly fine.
Okay. Well, I mean, I had everyone just accepted some of those protests during the national anthem during the NFL season. Then maybe this would be further along than it is. I don't know. I was in the stands that day, Murray, as you know, at Foxborough. It was not a pretty scene there in the stands, and you're telling me it wasn't a pretty scene where you were either.
No, it was worse where you were. I was in the press box. But leading up to it, we all knew, you know, it was going to be kind of a hot day throughout the league, and then you had the dear leader tweeting that day and the whole thing leading up to it, too, with the fire these sons of bitches, right? And man, like, it was even way worse than I thought. And you heard some pretty ugly stuff in the crowd. So, yeah, I mean, here we are 3 years later and still debating the same thing because we're the worst.
Sean's in Hudson. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I feel kind of bad for Drew Brees because overall he's a pretty charitable guy, usually has the right PR when he speaks. I think, you know, his heart's in the right place generally, but it's just incredibly tone deaf. Not as tone deaf as saying that George Floyd is smiling down on us because the unemployment numbers dip slightly.
What's this guy talking about?
The president.
The president said that today.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, the president said that George Floyd was smiling down. He somehow connected George Floyd to the decline in unemployment numbers.
No wonder I didn't understand it.
Yeah. He's also since weighed in on Drew Brees.
He has, yes. Yeah.
Oh, great. No, that'll do wonders for the program, Murray.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what you would expect.
Yeah.
The only time we allow Trump on the program is when Murray's doing his imitation. That's the only time we allow Trump on the program. Todd's in Denver. Go ahead, Todd.
Felger keeps complaining about Brady's increased effort in Tampa with daily passing workouts and renewed enthusiasm for football. His complaining sounds like a basement-dwelling loser lamenting the ex-girlfriend who's moved on to bigger and better things.
Okay, Todd. Well, thank you for the call. I don't think he's complaining about the fact that Brady is working out in Tampa Bay. I think he was complaining about the fact that Brady didn't go to OTAs when he was here. So, again, You know, lots of people missing the point this week. You know, so to me, that's what that was about. Chris, do you have any doubt that, do you think that it's just a coincidence that Brady showed up in Tampa and all of a sudden is bringing people outside to work out and now Jarrett Stidham is doing the same?
I don't think it's just a coincidence. I mean, look, I think a lot of teams across the NFL are probably doing quarterbacks. I remember during the lockout, you know, Brady organized things at BC and there were other quarterbacks doing. Matt Ryan did it. So it's sort of a similar situation in some ways. So I'm sure lots of quarterbacks are doing this. I remember Mark Sanchez, like one time he would take guys in the offseason to Southern California for little passing sessions. And even the last couple of years when Brady wasn't showing up for OTAs, he still was doing the throwing sessions in Montana with guys. So this, we've seen this before. I mean, most NFL quarterbacks do this. And again, like I stated at the beginning of the show, I don't feel like this is Stidham doing this on his own. I feel like it's Stidham and Hoyer doing this.
Chris, I'll tell you what, even if it were Stidham doing it on his own, if this were Stidham bringing the young guys out, and I say young guys, guys like him, Stidham, rather, N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers, Edelman's obviously a veteran player, but let's say it was all Stidham. It's what he should be doing. So what are we going to give him extra credit now for showing up? Like, that's the idea? It's a bigger story if he doesn't show. So again, this is the culture we're in now, or the world we're living in. You get a trophy for showing up when you were a kid. Now you actually practice during the offseason and put in a little work, and it's a big deal. So, now look, again, it's good. I'm glad. I'm happy to see it. It's a good sign. But it would be a much bigger story if Jarrett Stidham weren't putting in these kinds of things. And I also like your point that Brian Hoyer undoubtedly had a hand in it. And this is part of Brian Hoyer's job now as Jarrett Stidham's mentor.
Yeah, quarterback caddy, Maz. Quarterback caddy.
Yeah, I think that is the more we go on. I know we've talked about the offense and Hoyer's familiar with the system. It's really Hoyer trying to give further evidence of what a professional quarterback does in this day and age, and Belichick trusts Hoyer to do it. That's why Hoyer's here. Mike is in a truck. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, a couple things. First, I don't know who Breeze had on the line, but wouldn't it be something if they did something like the longest? Yeah, the lineman stood up and let him get lit up a couple times in the opener.
Okay, Chris, do you think there's any chance that the Saints, when they get on the field, they're going to let Drew Brees get the bag beaten out of him?
Refresh my memory. Didn't that happen, though, with Derek Carr and the Raiders?
Around? Did it?
I think so. Around when like the initial knee protest things were happening, or something that Derek Carr said, there was some controversy there that he...
Are you sure that wasn't just the Raiders having an exceptionally poor offensive line?
No.
So, Murray, now that you say this, I remember that he got sacked or something and no one went to help him up.
There was something about that. And granted, he's like kind of a big puss, so I can understand why some of his teammates look at him and be like, all right, enough of you. Let me look this up.
No, well, I'll tell you, get McCarthy to do it. That's his job today, Murray.
I'm already looking. I'm on it, Maz.
There you go, McCarthy. Look that up.
Yes,
Murray,
sir.
You got to try saying that every now and then. It's empowering. We've cried out loud. 617-779-0985. We'll wrap it up with Chris Gasper next.
Boston's home for sports. Zilger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Not complaining.
Oh, you had a mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No, 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 no. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And then once the playoffs start, and this was a point made by Michael Jordan, you know, whose team, the Charlotte Hornets, are not one of the 22 teams. But he's clearly the most respected voice in the room when it comes to basketball. He felt it was very important that after we establish the 16 teams, we not be gimmicky. Because there were a lot of proposals on the table to do unique tournaments and pool play like you see in international competition. And we took many of those proposals very seriously. But I think ultimately, and I agreed with Michael, that there's so much chaos in the world right now. I mean, even before the racial unrest we're experiencing now, that let's come as close to normal as we can. And as close to normal as we can is top eight in the West, top eight in the East, playing four rounds of seven games. So then that's what we intend to do, and our goal is to crown a champion.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver talking about the NBA playoff structure, in which, again, there'll be a brief regular season, a little play-in round, six additional teams added to the field for the regular season. So 22 teams playing for 16 spots, the large majority of those set. So just the final seeds, really, in each conference up for grabs. You heard him say there that Michael Jordan had a significant hand in preserving what is the current NBA playoff structure, 1-8 on each side, and then play it out from there in seven-game series. Chris, what do you think of what the NBA settled on here for a playoff structure given the pandemic?
I like it. You know, I don't love the play-in in the Eastern Conference. I really look at a team like the Washington Wizards, and I feel like they have no business with an opportunity to potentially get into the playoffs. I think you could have just, and especially when you're in a situation in terms of health and safety, where if you can limit the numbers, that could have a serious impact. I don't think that team needed to come back. But otherwise, the setup, I think, is pretty good. You know, you're going to come back with the 22 teams. I didn't think all 30 needed to come back. You'll give the Western Conference teams their chance. And I think you have a built-in system there. I didn't want some sort of gimmicky tournament for the eighth and final spot. The reality is, if the team's within four games in the ninth spot and they're going to have the tournament, then it's double elimination for the eight seed, and the eight seed only has to win once to keep the eight seed. I think it's a pretty good compromise.
So I'll tell you, Chris, now that I look at it, I don't understand why there were 22 versus 20. So in the West, I mean, I suppose maybe the NBA wanted to include at least one team from the East. Is that the motivation?
Yeah, I think that was where they were having a difficult time, because really there should not be any play-in in the East, and they decided that they wanted to give the Wizards a shot for some reason.
I mean, so Washington's not going to get in. They're 5.5 games out of the playoffs. They're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And so it's fair to say, what are they doing there at all? And their presence really ends up getting Phoenix in more than anything else, because Phoenix shouldn't be in either. The rest of the teams in the West are all within, you know, call it three or four games there.
Yeah, they're all within four. I mean, they're all within four games of Memphis, other than Phoenix, which is six games back.
Yeah, and I was going even purely by the loss column. So, Portland is 3.5 back, but they're actually four out in the loss column. So, I don't know, curious to me. The other thing I want to ask you about is the fact that Michael Jordan apparently has some sort of influence there when it comes to playoff structure and things like that. Do you buy that?
Not really. I mean, I have to say, this is the one thing that concerned me with the whole NBA thing. It's like, Clay Bennett, the guy who stole the Supersonics from Seattle, it's like he wants all the teams to come back. And I'm like, why are we listening to this guy? And then the owner of the Hawks was like, why are you listening to the Hawks owner? It's one of the most inept franchises since it's been in Atlanta in NBA history. And like, it has like no fan base other than your own Jim Murray down there, his Hawks.
But,
and then it's like, now we're going to listen to Michael Jordan, who's another terrible owner. He's a great basketball player. But I mean, stiff after stiff, he's put in his front office. And Barkley called him out on it. And now he won't talk to Barkley anymore. Why are you listening to the worst possible people? But at the end of the day, I think I'm fine with the format. I think the format's pretty good. And I'm glad they didn't do anything that was more gimmicky. And I know that there was a push to do it. Some people wanted this group play thing. I didn't want any part of that. Some people wanted a bigger play-in tournament. And that's not really what you have. So I think they got it right. But yeah, like, listen, you know, look, you want to listen to Michael Jordan about shooting a turnaround jump shot? That's great. But, you know, Michael Jordan, in terms of what he's been as an owner, I think, and also I'd say as a personnel executive, I mean, the guy who drafted Kwame Brown, number one overall, I'm not sure he would be exactly my basketball beacon for restarting the league.
So, Chris, obviously we've reached the end of your stint here, but before we let you go, I want to ask you this, and I'm going to completely blow this deadline here at 5 o'clock in order for you to get out, but screw it.
Your time's not important.
Yeah.
I've got a question to ask.
Yeah, I feel compelled to ask you that.
Sure.
Because during The Last Dance, you noted on more than one occasion that Jordan, during his career, drew great criticism for not standing up for racial issues, civic issues, all kinds of things. You know, the famous line that Republicans buy sneakers too, right? I mean, it's one that he will live with forever. Yet here in the last week, he certainly has been more vocal. And then the news today that Jordan and Jordan Brands will donate $100 million. $100 million, not $10 million, not $1 million, $100 million over the next 10 years, basically $10 million a year, to, you know, to support and educate people on the issues of racism and, you know, certainly transgressions of the like. Is this, in your mind, does this fix any of his inactivity from the years past, or is this too little too late, or how do you look at all this?
I say neither. It's not too little too late. It's never too late, and I certainly applaud him on it, and I applaud the statement that he released. But, I mean, does it completely absolve him from the apathy he showed and the inaction during the height of his playing career? And, you know, the thing with the Republicans buy shoes, too, that's not a left-right Republican-Democratic thing. The issue was a very particular Senate race in North Carolina with Jesse Helms, who was a staunch and virulent segregationist. It was one of the most racist politicians in the history of the country. So it wasn't just that he had the R next to his name. Who cares about that? It was what he stood for. I mean, Charlie Baker has an R next to his name and has a lot more compassion than a lot of politicians you're going to find out there. So it wasn't about that. I applaud him for doing it now. I think his kids have something to do with it. His daughter, Jasmine Jordan, was quoted in that. And I like the statement that he released before this, you know, basically saying we've had enough. But forever, it will be a missed opportunity during his playing career for him to speak up and speak out.
Chris, thank you for the time, as always.
Yeah, it was good.
Yep. All right. Okay. We'll see you later. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, sorry for the little lag there.
That's all right. No problem, Matt.
This is always the danger of doing the show from home.
Good to talk to you. Good to see you guys.
Likewise. So thanks to Gasper, Matt McCarthy, who gets you caught up here on headlines. Murray's alongside. We'll take your calls in the final hour here on Agenda Free Friday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.